Good morning. Come on in and find a seat. Good morning, and thank you so much for being here. I know most of you, but I'm Nicola Pitchford. I get to be president of this university. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm just delighted to get us really going again, although I know many of us have been going all summer. And I would like to start this State of the University and University Retreat Day by welcoming the chair of Dominican's Board of Trustees, Daryl Page.
Good morning. That's much more like it. You know, I'm really happy to be here with you today. We're acknowledging that another year has arrived, right? Perhaps really a year like no other that we've experienced. When we consider the political and environmental headwinds, financial challenges, and demographic shifts that elevate the level of risk, quite honestly, that we all face. In many ways, the road that we have charted ahead of us is difficult. But I would remind all of us that the opportunity that also lies in front of us is still rich. We have challenges, but the rewards are great. And my message to all of us today is together, we, the administration, the faculty, the Board of Trustees, really the entire community, can respond to the challenges ahead of us because the reality is we don't have a choice. You know, I became aware of this university over 15 years ago. I grew up on the peninsula, went to high school there, went to college in Santa Clara University. And I became aware of this university when I relocated to San Rafael and bought a home here at the corner of Grand and Jewel many, many years ago. And as I learned more about the university over that period of time and learned more about its mission and its students and what is done here, I fell in love with this place. I get asked all the time, you know, you're not an alumni. Why are you here at Dominican when you could be down the road at Santa Clara or be somewhere else doing that? And the answer to that question is really simple. The mission here, the vision here is what's important to me and really represents the values that I grew up with and the ones that my parents instilled in me. So even after relocating to the East Coast and coming back 10 years later, the fire that was lit from my early experience in the 2010 timeframe, the fire that was lit regarding Dominican was still burning. I want to say to you all that I was aware of the challenges that we faced when I returned to the board in 2024. I had been a member of the board in 2010. And so I was aware of those challenges when I returned in 2024. And I was much deeper involved in understanding those challenges when I agreed to become chair of the Board of Trustees in 2025. And I'm here because what you all do here is worth preserving. the impact that you have on the lives of young people who might not have another outlet is immeasurable, and I believe cannot be replicated elsewhere. I'm fond of telling my friends and acquaintances and the folks that I encounter in this city and in this county that all you have to do is come to Dominican and observe a commencement ceremony here and witness the joy and the happiness that our university brings to students and their families, and you'll fall in love with this place too. You know, realistically, I could be spending my time doing a lot of different things, but I choose to volunteer my time here because what you all do matters. It matters to our students, it matters to our community, and it matters, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but it matters to our world. There aren't many places like Dominican University, and I'm honored and privileged to be associated with it. Our Board of Trustees is committed to Dominican's future. We're driven by our mission, and we're guided by our North Star. Look, we need to change because our business model is broken. But we can build anew while preserving the fabric and the ethos that makes Dominican who we are. So my request for all of you as we start this new year is let's all work together to preserve something that we all know and agree is incredibly valuable and incredibly important to the lives of the people we impact the most, who are our students. So thank you for being here. Thank you for coming back and for kicking off this new academic year for us. Nicola?
I so appreciate the wisdom and support that Daryl and all of our all-volunteer board brings to making sure that we are robust and resilient as a university. Very much appreciate that. I also want to say thank you to Stuart Horn, who is once again overseeing sound in here. Thank you, Stu. And thank you to the staff in academic affairs, I think Jessica and Tammy in particular, who have played a central role in organizing this afternoon's events. I'm struck by the emotional dissonance, I guess I would call it, between how happy I am to be here again with the first wave of our new academic year as a community, to be gathered with all of you again. And on the other hand, the fact that we're in really grim circumstances. So I think what Daryl said about joy, the joy that our work helps foster for students, for their families, for our communities where they have impact, that's the common thread. And that's what's going to take us forward. I know that some of our academic programs operate year-round, and we've had students on campus and joyfully rowdy kids on campus all summer, but I have really missed the full student body experience on campus this year. While summer has flown by, my longing to have all of our students back with us is more intense than it's ever been. I'm excited for that. I want to begin, in fact, with a student, because as we undertake our difficult work, always having the students first is the most important principle. For my purposes today, I could have chosen any number of student stories from among the profiles and news stories that Sarah Gardner so expertly writes up just beautifully for the website and for sharing out to media. But I'm going to single out one, our recent graduate, Hannah Lam Trung, who is headed to optometry school this fall, having been admitted to at least 5 of the only 25 doctoral programs across the US. Hannah grew up in Novato, nearby. She came to Dominican for our women's tennis team and also for our well-regarded pre-med program, and because the campus felt so welcoming and comfortable to her immediately. She developed an interest in eye health and specifically glaucoma while studying general anatomy as a sophomore with Professor Doreen Girola. Hannah also served as a TA for human physiology and human anatomy and contributed to the Department of Natural Sciences outreach efforts, including presenting to her near peers at local high schools and assisting with tours of the Science Center. Hannah also developed at Dominican a love of creative writing and of literature, starting with a class taught by Dr. Claudio Morales. She speaks in Sarah's profile story about how engaging with language and writing and creativity allowed her both to expand her skills and to support her own emotional resilience as she worked hard. So I want to say thank you to Claudia, Doreen, Dr. Christine Coe, Victoria Warch, and Coach Christina Hassanali, all of whom Hannah called out by name in talking about what had made her Dominican experience so extraordinary. You'll be unsurprised that I'm also going to draw in my remarks this morning on some poetry, going back as ever to the importance of disciplinary roots. But unlike much of the poetry or nonfiction literature that I've drawn on in State of the University talks over the past 6 years by Ada Limon, Sean Hewitt, Rebecca Solnit, or James Rebanks, this one isn't from a woke contemporary writer. It's from a very dead white guy who it could hardly be more canonical in British literature studies. This poem was on my required reading list, both for my undergraduate exams and for my doctoral exams. It's by the British Victorian cultural critic, classicist, education theorist, and poet Matthew Arnold. And the poem is Dover Beach. The sea is calm tonight. The tide is full. The moon lies fair upon the straits. On the French coast, the light gleams and is gone. The cliffs of England stand glimmering and vast out in the tranquil bay. Come to the window. Sweet is the night air. Only from the long line of spray where the sea meets the moon-blanched land, listen, you hear the grating roar of pebbles which the waves draw back and fling at their return up the high strand, begin and cease and then begin again with tremulous cadence slow and bring the eternal note of sadness in. Sophocles long ago heard it on the Aegean, and it brought into his mind the turbid ebb and flow of human misery. We find also in the sound a thought, hearing it by this distant northern sea. The sea of faith was once too at the full, and round earth's shore lay like folds of a bright girdle furled, but now I only hear its melancholy, long, withdrawing roar, retreating to the breath of the night wind, down the vast edges drear and naked shingles of the world. Ah, love, let us be true to one another. For the world, which seems to lie before us like a land of dreams, so various, so beautiful, so new, hath really neither joy, nor love, nor light, nor certitude, nor peace, nor help for pain. And we are here, as on a darkling plain, swept with confused alarms of struggle and fight, where ignorant armies crash by night. Well, why Matthew Arnold now and here at a gathering introducing the new academic year with anticipation and fresh energy and focus, and at a moment when Dominican is in as serious a situation as perhaps we've ever been in 136 years. Well, there are a number of reasons that Dover Beach has been echoing in my mind and feeling useful to me in shaping my thoughts. Arnold wrote the poem in 1851, probably while on his honeymoon, by the way, in Dover on the English coast. But he didn't publish it until 1867, pretty much right in the middle of the Victorian era. It reflects deeply Victorian worries about change, anarchy, the decentering and destabilization of a stable culture, even, of course, as Victorian Britain was enthusiastically destabilizing other cultures around the world. That widely felt sense of instability was prompted by many things, from the intensification of the Industrial Revolution to the European bourgeois uprisings of 1848 to the publication of Darwin's Origin of the Species in 1859, which seemed to question core Christian belief, to the domestic upheavals that led to the 1867 Reform Act, which extended the right to vote from only propertied men in England to urban working class men. I am not an expert in the 19th century, and I apologize to those colleagues who are. Suffice it to say, there's more than a couple of parallels between that moment and ours. We are here as on a darkling plain where ignorant armies clash by night. Arnold was also, as I mentioned, specifically a theorist of education. He was by profession a schools inspector, and he was the son of perhaps the most famous headmaster in English history. And arguments about the purpose and value of education were far from unfamiliar to him, particularly liberal education versus purely practical professional education. His references to Sophocles and Thucydides suggest where he came down on that binary. He knew culture wars, and this poem shows that. I don't want to harp too much on the ignorant armies clashing by night, but right now US higher ed does feel embattled. And specifically, institutions like Dominican are facing a much harsher onslaught, in fact, than Arnold's imagined speaker. Not just a mournfully receding tide of cultural and educational values that formerly seemed to be shared, although also that, but also an active battering by wave upon wave of hostile and damaging forces. You know that list. We've talked about it together. We've read about it individually. The demographic cliff of falling birth rates, the disappearance of the middle class, the decline of degree-worthy entry-level jobs, the failure of government financial aid to keep pace with college costs, attacks on DEI, feminism, LGBTQ rights, and so-called ideological indoctrination in the academy, massive federal cuts to grants and loan programs, increasing compliance requirements, the need for ever-expanding investment in student support, in ensuring mental health services and in digital technologies. And now, extreme pressure on accreditors from the Department of Education demanding greater accountability. And all of this contributes to genuine financial jeopardy for Dominican, for the incredibly valuable, precious work of this community that Daryl spoke to, our work that supports, enables, and challenges students like Hannah to achieve outcomes likely to transform their lives. No matter how hard we have worked to reduce costs, to imagine and design new revenue streams, maintain quality and integrity with fewer resources, it feels as though every time the next wave hits and beats us back, drenches us all over again. The plans that we implemented to balance our budget worked for 2 years, and now we're right back in deficit again. And we're being called out on that very publicly by our accrediting agency, WASC. The accreditation warning that Dominican has been placed on this summer, which we will talk more about together this afternoon, doesn't just name our position by declaring, based on considered peer review, that we have insufficient resources to ensure financial sustainability. It also, in some ways, constrains our options, requiring tight timelines for serious budgetary change, and subjecting any new academic initiatives to more thorough scrutiny than we would have faced before this moment. The fact that the WASC warning was also reported on by regional media, the San Francisco Chronicle, as well as the Marin Independent Journal, is also challenging, meaning more of our prospective students, our prospective donors, may have heard the potentially chilling message that they might want to think twice about investing in Dominican. But the WASC warning opens doors for us too. There have been some dramatic actions on our budget, some deep cost cutting and some potential changes to our focus and our organizational structure and even our physical campus that I have been hesitant to push for before now, because they are sufficiently dramatic that they could inadvertently send a message to our community, to our neighbors, to our prospective students, that amid a general jitteriness, a realistic jitteriness about the future for small regional institutions like ours, that Dominican is going down, that we're on a downward spiral. Frankly, that message now is out there. And so we do have to make the most of our situation and to make some of those really deep cuts and dramatic changes that no longer will signal we're in trouble and instead will signal we're taking our situation seriously and acting responsibly to address it. That does not mean that the coming year is not going to be hard. It's going to be harder than even those we have been going through. And we may still find that we are racked with doubt about the choices we have to make. Which brings me back to Matthew Arnold, his dark vision of a dark moment. The loss of shared values, the loss of faith in institutions and ideals, violent struggle over culture and national identity. It's no accident that Arnold situates this poem at a place that is core to English national pride, the White Cliffs of Dover, and that the speaker is looking out, watching the light disappear from Europe. The only antidote that Arnold offers is the plaintive cry, "Ah, love, let us be true to one another," which he immediately then follows by denying there is any joy, beauty, love, peace, or faith in the world beyond these two people. Again, he wrote this on his honeymoon. Good times. But that plea has really been echoing to me. I think Daryl Page used the word love. We love this place. We love this community. And so many of us experience what I experienced when I came to interview here in the spring of 2011, which was this profound sense that people care. Love, let us be true to one another. That is my, as they say in strategic planning circles, my big, hairy, audacious goal for Dominican. Let us be true to one another while ignorant armies clash by night. Let us be true to one another, even as WASC warns us that we only have 2 years to turn things around. Let us be true to one another, even as I know I will be coming to you and asking for significant financial sacrifices over the short term. And I can offer in return little certainty of our future beyond the current confused alarms of struggle and flight. But I know it's worth it. It matters. It's crucial that we be able to trust one another as we engage in this work. And I know that is not easy. Trust one another's competence to do the work. Trust one another's will to work hard. Trust that no one is hogging or hiding resources. No one has it better than I do. The more uncertain and difficult the circumstances we face, the more we need to be able to work together collaboratively, honestly, and transparently. I know that asking us to extend grace to one another may be challenging coming from me in the position of the most privileged on campus. This is the sixth year I've stood in front of you as president, talking about difficult times and how hard we're all going to have to work to get through it together. Over that time, you've seen me stand up with 5 different vice presidents or interim vice presidents of finance. And this year, you'll see me soon with our interim vice president, Jim Hyatt, number 6, telling you that we need to reduce our operating deficits. And then I've told you how we've made real progress, bringing ourselves back from the brink of failing to meet the required federal financial responsibility score 3 years in a row, which would have caused us to have to deposit more than $2 million in assurance with the federal government. We came back from that. I've been telling you things are getting a little bit better on our key measures. You've seen me prioritize earning Hispanic-serving institution status, and then you've seen us have $3 million taken away from us and our students because we did that. And now we're being definitively and authoritatively told that we have not done enough, and we are heading for crisis. Most acutely painful to me right now, and the reasons you may not trust me, when I ask you for trust, is that I told you in good faith, as recently as June 2026, that we anticipated ending the fiscal year with a third successive balanced operating budget. We now know we did not. It seems that, and I would say we also built our draft budget for the coming year on that assumption. It seems now that prior to our official audit, which is underway and not over, we may have closed the year with as much as a $2.5 million deficit. You are owed honesty about that, although we need to do some more forensic work yet to fully understand where the discrepancies were and why we weren't able to foresee them sooner. Certainly, we had a drop in fundraising as we went through a complete changeover in the leadership and senior staff in advancement. Inevitably, we have rebuilt the advancement office with new people and new energy in a number of key roles. We also gave out more in discount aid to undergraduates than we had projected last year, and we overspent in travel. This renewed deficit just deepens the existing structural challenges that our WASC peer review team and the Commission identified. As I said, this afternoon we'll talk more about the WASC warning, what it requires of us, and what we're going to do on what timeline. And also about the two other big priorities that we simply have to address simultaneously this year with our reporting to WASC. All three are interrelated, and although they will play out over different timelines, none of them can be delayed. So the first is accountability to WASC, producing robust evidence that we are urgently addressing our budget situation and the larger multi-year expense and revenue model within which it functions. Two, in order to do that, and because our short-term economies have stopped being effective to rebalance our budget, and we have again slipped into the red, where we cannot afford to stay, we will have to take severe measures to cut our spending this year and for the next several years. And third, meanwhile, we have to continue rapidly the work we began collectively last year of building a transformative plan around the future vision of Dominican as a health and community well-being campus in deeper partnership with other community organizations and institutions. The steering committee for this planning process, on which both Chair Page and I sit, and eight task forces on which many of you sit, are well into our work to produce an action plan by the end of October for the board to approve. We have to make that plan now, even though it speaks to 5 and 10 years out, or we will be left with nothing but short-term fixes at our disposal that are not going to be sustainable for more than a couple of years. We have also to make the short-term fixes, or there will be no point having a transformative vision. It's a lot, and I wish we didn't have to do it all at once. I promise to do my best to be as communicative and transparent with you throughout as I can, to build trust, to share with you to the broadest and most detailed extent that I can, and in the most timely and regular way, what any of us in leadership know and what we don't yet know, and what progress we are making together. One thing to expect from me is a brief weekly email update on our financial situation, accreditation, and our planning progress. This difficult work is the only thing we can do if we do want, and we do, to keep having this university, to keep having our jobs, to keep tending to our amazing students and helping them transform their lives and the world. We have no choice. Now more than ever, keeping doing what we've been doing the way we've been doing it isn't an option for us. None of us will be able to continue with the vision that is so precious. Doing this work that we have not chosen, and practicing being a community of trust and collaboration and resilience, finding ways to buoy one another up, to help one another amid all of our anxiety and uncertainty, is worth it. It's worth it for us, it's worth it for our students, for our community. It's worth it for the values that we all believe are really important. We can't take on most of the structural challenges that are battling against higher education in the US right now. We can only do our best here with the work that is, we hope, under our control. And remembering why we bother. Again, we need to begin and end every action with our students, with their stories, their commitments, and hope. They are our joy. And that's why I really hunger to see them all back on campus again this week and next week, because they are why it's worth our persisting together in the name of the work we do. Thank you. So I hope you will enjoy lunch with one another in various places, or at your desk, if you're already going back to your desk. And we will gather again at 1 o'clock in Guzman Lecture Hall, where there will be dessert and drinks to share. And we will be talking more about those three crucial initiatives that we've got to move forward this year. Thank you.
Loving you. I'm in the wrong place. Must have been the wrong place. Share.